what is becoming more and more apparent to me is really just how much this is our spiritual life. And by this, I really do mean your day-to-day existence. There is a real misunderstanding that spiritual life is in some way a transformation of your day-to-day existence, when in fact it's really just in how you live your day-to-day existence. The transformation is just attitude. You don't need to live in a monastery. You don't need to live in a cave. You don't need to go anywhere for your spiritual life. You don't need to come here for your spiritual life. Rudy always said, life is the teacher, and what you really begin to experience as you go on this very extensive and rich journey of human experience is that the only place you are and always are is here. And how you respond to being here is everything. It's everything. Sitting for half an hour a day is a good thing. Gets you quiet. It helps you sensitize yourself to stillness. It helps you see your life a little bit. It grounds you in your approach to the day. It has wonderful benefit. But to walk away from your meditation and then get lost in the day is meaningless. It negates in some way the true value of the teaching. The teaching is to be present in your day, to be meditatively aware in your day, so that you live your day consciously. Rudy talked about this all the time. It really is one of the undercurrents of his entire teaching. Every moment of your day presents you with an opportunity to open to and embrace what is or to reject it. All day long, that's exactly what you're given. The day starts, and you can either go yes to it or no to it, moment to moment to moment. The deepest spiritual practice is an ongoing yes to what's in front of you, and an effortless yes to what's in front of you. A deep honoring of what is, a deep honoring of the reality of this is what has emerged. You may have not wanted it to be that way, you may have wished it would have been this way, but this is what has been given. And learning to say yes to that is everything. I know this sounds simple, but I know that I've been practicing for 40 years and I'm only now really, I think, understanding it. It's really our rejection of what is that forms our ego. Our ego is essentially the thing that said no to something, or the thing that grasped at something. The ego is never satisfied with the status quo. If it likes what's in front of it, it wants it forever. If it doesn't like it, it wants to let go of it immediately and reach for something else. And so, in a certain sense, who we have become, each of us, is essentially a product of resistance to life. We have defined ourselves by what we don't like and have begun to design ourselves around what we do like, what we do want. And so when the thing that's presented to us is not the thing we want, we change it to become the thing we desire. And we keep doing this constantly, and we have created this personality. And this personality of our being is something that in many ways has rejected life. It's hard to fully grasp that. If you want to really grasp that, let me give you a simple exercise. Rudy said, and I talked about this last week in my class, I've been talking about it a lot because it's been really important to me. He says, don't judge your spiritual life by how happy you are, but by the happiness of the people around you. In a certain sense, what that sets up, if you want to have a true spiritual life, is a kind of obligation to make the people around you happy. Which may seem easy at first, until you try it. And then you see, to make others happy, you often have to sacrifice something that makes you happy. You often have to give of yourself. You often have to make other efforts that you would not normally make. You have to begin to let go of your ego need for satisfaction and become the satisfier of other people's wants and needs. And if you want to see the depth of your own rejection of making people happy, watch this voice in you that will come up that will say, well, what about me? What about me? The what about me voice is the ego-defining voice. It seeks its own aggrandizement. It seeks its own pleasure. It seeks its own avoidance of discomfort and unhappiness. And it seeks it usually no matter how it affects anybody else. If you were willing to take on the choice of making others happy, and let me tell you where that begins. It begins with the people who are closest to you. Your mother, your wife, your partner, your child, your best friend. If you take on the real job of making them happy, and you'll have to figure out what that means, it will change your life. It will change your life because, one, you will begin to understand sacrifice for the other. You will begin to stop making you the center of the universe. And you will begin to see that the other in your life is you, is your life. It is powerful reality. The other person in your life, if they are not happy, you are not happy. If they are not satisfied, you are not satisfied. And we never see that. We only look, am I happy? And if you're not happy, you blame others. But there's no blame, because The true joy that you seek in your life will come by making others happy. Now, this sounds like a very New Age prescription, but I really recommend it as a experimental practice. Take a week and just see, what can I do to make the person who's closest to me in my life happy? Or whoever is appearing in your life. It could be your boss, your coworker. There's so many people who keep reoccurring in your life who are miserable. And they are your misery externalized. Truly. They are you suffering. And you are allowing them to suffer because you are not conscious that they are you, that they exist as a part of your whole your totality. And once you start to break you down to do the thing that is required to serve the other, do you begin to understand what it is to be truly in pursuit of a spiritual practice. What you will see defining itself in this practice is that when another person is acknowledged, accepted as they are, and if you want to make someone happy, one of the key things is accept them as they are. Don't try to make them in your mold. Let them be what they are. Accept them completely and absolutely in their terms. Nothing is going to make a person more unhappy than being rejected by you because of who they are. It's the most painful thing. People don't love you because of who you are. What do you do with that? And yet that is basically how we go through life. We like everything about a person except this, 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 this. Well, that this, 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 this becomes ultimately, you will discover, long enough in a relationship, the focus. You start to go into all of the stuff that isn't right. And that's exactly where you need to go to learn to accept it. To learn to love and honor and allow that to be. And when you start to do that in another person, you will discover you can start to do that in yourself. Because each of us have whole areas that we do not love and do not like. And as you start to allow that other being to be who they are and to love them for who they are, you will find something in you is starting to love you for who you are. That this thing of accepting what is has enormous transformative power. And what it does is it doesn't change you into something else. It changes you from being unhappy with what is to being happy with what is, to allowing it to be. That exercise is, I believe, one of the core elements of a true spiritual existence. What you start to see as you walk through the day is opportunity upon opportunity upon opportunity to affect the world in a truly loving, acknowledging, and embracing way. You really begin to see, as Rudy used to talk about, that bottle cap sitting on the street is for you to pick up and throw in the garbage. It's not for the next guy to do it. It's for you. You'll begin to see there's all this stuff right in front of you. And I used to find there's all these things when I wake up in the morning that Blanche does. And I started thinking, well, why does Blanche have to do that? I can do that. Especially if it's in front of me. Like emptying the dishwasher. Getting up to let the dogs out. There are all these things that I never even considered. And so I started getting up earlier to let the dogs out. And when I'm letting the dogs out, the dishwasher needs to be emptied. So I do that. Never did it cross my mind that this was an option. And suddenly I noticed that Blanche was putting out my peanut butter for breakfast and my cup for tea. And she was just starting to do all this stuff for me. And I'm going, huh, this incredibly sweet, silent communication between two people of allowing and accepting and acknowledging that was so incredibly sweet. And the atmosphere, and because I'm trying to preach what I practice, or practice, excuse me, what I preach, and it's in both ways. I've really been working this for the last 3 months, and it has been amazingly, amazingly wonderful. And my relationship with Blanche, and we've always had a, you know, we've been together 40 years. You know, you there's something going on there, but it started in the last so many years with New York, LA, and I've talked about this, to get tense. And we've started to truly break this down, and the breaking down of it came because it was really simple. And this is really important. I realized one of us had to change. And I realized Blanche wasn't exactly predisposed to changing. So who did that leave? Well, me. So I said, well, look, I need to change. That was a big, wonderful revelation. And I just realized no one else is going to do it. No one else is ever going to do it. You're going to do it. And we've learned how to do it. We've learned spiritually how to do it. You just change. You live differently. You act differently. And the immediate response to that was, from Blanche, was a recognition that she saw this happening, and she became happy. She became really happy. And her happiness started to infect the environment, and suddenly, I was really happy. And the two of us have just found this new place of serving each other, honestly, by being aware of the happiness of the ones around us. It's a simple, simple prescription. It's not always easy to do because we have this thing called ego that says, what about me? If you want to learn what your ego is and you want to see it in operation, try working for others. See how selfish it is. See how small-minded. See how corroded, in a way, it is. And then don't reject that. Don't get angry at it. Don't say, that's terrible. Learn. And what you will begin to see is how much ego defines you, how much ego drives you. And as you look at it and just accept it for what it is, it starts to change its nature. And you stop being embattled with your own ego, and you start understanding it. And so you start saying to your wife or partner, my ego needs this. It's saying this. I need this from you. And the dialogue that's opened up with Blanche and I has been so exquisitely beautiful and simple and real and true. And it's not based on emotionality. It's based totally on the real experience of need. Because egos have needs. And once you start to acknowledge it or even talk about it, and you talk about it in an atmosphere of happiness or love, it gets addressed and stuff starts to change. What does happen, which I've discovered, is you become very vulnerable. Exceedingly vulnerable. Your emotions become really amplified. And it's, in one way, exquisite, and in another way, it's really... It's like you're a little baby. You're ready to cry at the first thing you hear that makes you sad. You start laughing at the stuff that makes you laugh. You become like a child again, in the Christian sense. The sense that you're like, you become innocent. And you just live this simple life. And it is exceedingly beautiful. Does this lead to enlightenment and liberation? I don't know what leads to enlightenment and liberation. I think enlightenment and liberation happen of their own nature. But this is an incredibly good way to live until that happens. That's sort of how I see it. That we can try to do all these incredible spiritual things, but you cannot make your enlightenment take place. You can't earn it. You can't do anything to make it happen. I don't care how spiritual you are, how much you live in the forest, and you sit there and you meditate for 20 years, it will happen when it wants to happen. So what do you do until then? Make the other happy. Make others happy. Find out what that means. What is it you can do, and start to do it. One little step at a time, do it, and see where it goes. Again, you know, when I last was here, which was 3 months ago, I talked about this as an experiment. I described it very specifically. It's on the website, as an experiment. Well, it's an experiment 3 months in, and it's working. That's all I can tell you. If in 4 months it's not working, I'll report back. But if it's not working, it'll only be because it's possible, I suppose, to slip up. But I don't think it is, really. Once you get this, you just do it. Once you understand it, you do it. It's how you live. You just live a life of service and of really deep caring about the other. I don't care who it is. If they're on the elevator with you, if they're in line at the supermarket, it doesn't matter who they are. You have an opportunity to give. You don't have to, and it's no requirement, and you don't have to become crazy about it. It's a simple thing. It will happen naturally. It just happens. And another thing that seems to happen is that when you're very conscious of the living reality of this moment, the really intense truth of this moment, the absolute reality of here and now, the past really, really starts to recede in ways that is hard to imagine. And future just isn't on the agenda except when it is. When it comes up, it comes right into the present. It says you've got to do this now for then. And there it is. And you then go, oh. And you have to act on it. And you may actually have to think about the future, but you're thinking about it right there. And you're acting on whatever it is that will affect that. But that's all it is. And once that's done, you're not in the future. You're really here. And so you're living all day, all night, because it goes into your dream life. You're living in this incredible present in which you are trying consciously all day long to be attentive to that which is in front of you. Just attentive, not resistant, accepting, open, allowing, and in the realm of other human beings, to make them happy in their life by accepting them as they are. Deep acceptance. So that's what's been going on for the last 3 months of my life, and it has proven to be exceptional and simple, and it really isn't about getting somewhere else. It's truly not about living a spiritual life not to have to be here, living a spiritual life so you don't have to be who you are. It's the exact opposite of that. It's living a spiritual life to be who you are right here. And understanding this is it. This is it. It is not it's not a chance thing. This is exactly what it is supposed to be. And you're in it, and you are really in it. And it is remarkable. So, any questions?
This addresses something very felt in my own life, the sense of coming to an understanding of how to embrace life and what life brings you, an understanding that there are choices to be made that bring about significant changes, and how does one sort of understand that being able to be open to what life brings you does have its limits, in the sense that one...
It does. Life, I mean... Sometimes one has to accept resistance. Sometimes one has to accept the hard thing, the thing that you don't like. There's a lot of things that are part of acceptance, including accepting that I can't accept this. I cannot accept this thing. That is not wrong, and you start to feel that. Yes, there is choice, and I have to go one over another. And what's the guiding principle of choice? How do you know this is the right one or this is the wrong one? Well, I've talked about this a little bit before. something in us senses the right choice over the wrong choice, often. And there's a lot of, it's an internal measurement, which is where mind becomes very helpful on some level, and intuition becomes very helpful, because you lean a little bit this way, or you lean a little bit that way, and finally you just go, that's the choice. When you really don't lean in either direction, it kind of doesn't matter. Pick one. Pick one and go forward. Your life will be the life it's supposed to be. And it, I know it looks like there's huge consequence from this direction as opposed to that direction. The only real difference is that what fills this space of here and now will look a little different. It may have more money in it or less money in it. It may have a different set of walls and a set of a space in which you exist than the other space that you exist. But what will be the constant in that? If you are open and if you are accepting, you will go, ah, I am in this set of walls. I am in this condition. You know, a lot of people now are learning to be with less money, less comfort, a lot of things. I mean, going on all over the place. That's not easy. But sit in the middle of that, and how are you? What's going on? I am discovering, I have to say, with people who I know who are really losing things they've had, that their happiness has not diminished. If anything, they've started to discover more and more the thing that has always given them happiness, and that it had nothing to do with all of the externals that they thought would bring that into their life. You begin to feel that what is right here and now is so blessed that even though it's different and it's another perspective and you are not necessarily as at ease yet with what that is, you will be. As soon as you open and go, yes, it will be fine. So that the choice you make matters and doesn't matter. You know, it's you can't know the future. All you can do is your best guess, your best estimate to whether it will lead this way or that way. Will it bring you happiness? Yes. Why? Because it doesn't matter which way you go. Because you will find in yourself this acceptance of what is. You know, you've made very good choices along the way in terms of career and thinking this will be the big moment, this will bring me something, and then the one you think is going to be great suddenly is not so great. And then the one you think is going to be, is terrific. You don't know, you can't project fully down the road, nor can I, any of us. We all try, we all give it our best shot. But in the truth, we have no idea. It's going to be what it's going to be, and it's going to be, I guarantee you this, good and bad. And an endless escalation, or oscillation. Good and bad, good and bad, good and bad, good and bad, until you die. That's all it's going to be. Really good, really bad sometimes, or kind of a little bit bad, a little bit good, like that. And you're going to be in the middle of that, and what you're going to do spiritually is go, yes, yes, of course, of course. Or in the Zen parable, even this, even this. You just keep saying it. So how do you make your choice? I mean, you go, pick one, and see what happens. And you're going to be partly right and partly wrong. And it doesn't matter, because you're going to be a really happy human being. Because you are, basically, even as we speak, a truly happy human being. And I don't mean happy like, ha ha ha, I'm always happy. It's really, it isn't, has nothing to do with that. It's something else. It's, happy is the wrong word. It's a kind of contentment, or a kind of, yes. It doesn't. It's not. It doesn't percolate in this kind of funny space where you're looking for experience. It's really about a ground level of really being there, really being there. If you're really there in the moment, you're in a state of almost wonder. Honestly, it's like, huh, huh. Even if you hate it, I was in the airport yesterday. It was awful. The noise, the delayed flights, all of this stuff, and I'm going, Wow. You know, I mean, I had questions. How do people live like this? How do they live with the barrage of noise and stuff that's now part of our 21st century life? I didn't understand it, and I couldn't get out of it. There was nowhere to go. I couldn't hide in the bathroom. So I just sat there. And I wasn't comfortable, but I went, I knew it was going to change, and it did. I got on the plane. I got a great seat. Then the person next to me was very, very uncomfortable. And I went, okay, it's only 6 hours, you know. And even then, it wasn't so terrible. It's an ongoing transformation, and the spiritual life is saying, this is what it is now. Open. Allow. Accept. And sometimes you will start crying because it's so amazing, and sometimes you'll feel like, I wish it was other, but I can't do anything about it. Making this choice, whatever the choice is right now, follow those instincts in you. Follow the little information you've been given, and always there's a little information, and then make your best guess and see where it goes. You're going to be fine. That's what you know. You're going to be fine. Does that help at all? I know people want, this is what you should do. No. And nobody should tell you what that is.
And I think what this recent process has brought up is also this sort of question, like, oh, should there be something for me to do that actually enhances my spiritual life? Is there something more specific? Is sort of like, maybe not go to the cave, but do this, or not, you know, sort of like, is there something I should be considering right now that, if I'm looking at my spiritual life, is really the most meaningful thing, the most true thing about being alive?
That's the mind talking. And the mind thinks, if I make this choice, it'll be more spiritual than that choice. You can't not make a spiritual choice, and you cannot enter into any activity that doesn't partake of the cave. Everything you do is what you do. The choice is, it brings something into this thing. When you open your eyes in the morning, it's arriving. You know, I have to get up and go here, or I have to get up and go there, or I have to go sit down there. Whatever it is, something arrives, and how you do that is the expression of your spiritual life. Period. Whatever it is, whether it's really demanding or just somewhat demanding or awful, doesn't matter. It's the thing that came. It's the thing that's arrived. Do it with your spiritual awareness. And it will make it all, not necessarily sweet and delicious, but it will make it all present. You'll get it. You'll get what life is. You'll see what life is. Life is so real. And you'll touch reality every day. And you'll find it amazing, I think. And you'll be glad to be there. Okay? Daniel?
When you make yourself so open and accepting of every single thing in someone very close to you, especially those things that you thought they should change.
Mm-hmm.
How do you not become attached to those things then? Because I've seen couples where one will, I guess, start to find those things charming, and then you'll see that when the person does want to change, there'll actually be the resistance to them changing.
Well, hopefully at that point there will be a dialogue, or there will be some exchange that will allow for that to express itself. I think when you find that resistance in you to the other person changing the charming thing that you've learned to love, that's your resistance. And in a sense, you then have to go with the new chance, the new thing. Accept that life is always in transformation. It's always changing. And learn to go with that. And it will challenge you. It will open you up, and it will open you up, and it will open you up. And you will keep finding a value in saying, help me to surrender. Help me to do this. Help me to accept that the thing I loved is now changing yet again. It's now turning into something else. Help me to do that. And there is this thing inside you that does that. I mean, the real practice here is finding a way to accept. Because I tell you to accept, you go, oh, okay, I accept it. Not so easy. I mean, it can be. It really can be. Once you're on the treadmill of acceptance, you just do it. The Zen monks, you know, they're just, you know, they just take it on. It comes and it comes and it comes, whatever it may be. The human dimension of that, where most of us live, is that it's a conscious act. You have to consciously go and see you fighting it, see you creating tension in yourself as a result, creating unhappiness in someone else, and then go, please help me to surrender. You can try the double breath, or you can just be very present with it, and you don't have to do very much of anything. You just allow it to be. It's practice. It's really practice. The great thing about this practice is it's spiritual life all day, all night. It doesn't go away. You just are in it, you are living it, and you are being really transformed by it all the time. You will be washed away and washed away and washed away and washed away until there's just this pure thing, which is as close as you get to true awakening or enlightenment until the universe goes and bursts the bubble that was you. You can't do that, but you can get ready for that. And you can live a life that approximates that. And it's a beautiful life. It really clarifies and purifies as you go along. And, you know, you're in process. I mean, I think you feel that, but you transmit that. You project that. This is already working in you. It's just keep it going. It's not hard. It's really not as hard as it appears from the mind's point of view. The doing it is just do it. Does that help?
I just want to say one little thing about couples that I learned from my most difficult client, a client that I was like, why am I doing this? She was just so difficult. She taught me something very interesting. She's a therapist about couples. She was writing the book. She said, very often in a couple, one person acts out, the other person acts in, and together they make a whole. So sometimes it looks like they're so opposite, but they form a whole. And that has helped me enormously in understanding any kinds of really close relationships where one seems to have such terrible habits and the other suffers them. Mm-hmm. One thing.
Well, it is one thing, but it's not always a healthy thing.
No, it's just a description.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So you have to become conscious of,
right.
Oh, wait a minute, this person is acting out that part of me that I turn inward that no one gets to see.
Yes, I see
back
that.
To that, taking complete responsibility.
Right. I mean, partly, sometimes acceptance is that you have to accept that you should not be in this relationship. Mm-hmm. And people often fight that truth. You know, some things are just purely destructive and not good for you. And sometimes you have to say, I mean, true acceptance is changing that. But in, you know, and certainly in my circumstance, it was true acceptance was realizing that what I had was wonderful. You know, and sometimes you take things for granted. I certainly had, and so had Blanche. I mean, we both, you know, you're together 40 years. You get a lot of patterning going on, and you really do learn. I mean, if you commit to a spiritual life, and Blanche and I committed at our wedding to a spiritual life with each other, that once you've committed, you have to stay true to that. And even though it can get sloppy along the way, which it does, you need to return to that over and over and over. And it's a wonderful thing to have to return to. It's an underlying principle. And even in the most, you know, I've lived meditative life for a long time, and I don't think I saw all the stuff that was going on that wasn't working right, you know. But it comes. You just keep at it. It comes, and it comes because when it's not working, it hurts, and when it hurts, you have to pay attention. The whole idea of pain, you pay attention, and then you either do the right thing or the wrong thing. But grounding in a spiritual life, chances are you'll do the right thing. Anybody else? Okay. You know, I'll be around for, I think, for 2 months, and it's the shortest time I've been here on a regular basis, and I feel bad about it. But there's a lot of reasons for this, and next year more so, I'll be gone, you know, in Europe. So it's going to be less and less Bruce-driven spiritual life, and it's going to be more and more that you have other teachers. You have other really, really good teachers here. And for me, having others come in to be teaching is a gift. It's a great gift. And so it will allow this practice to continue without it being centered around any one person. And it's going to have to become that, and it is becoming that, and I'm just grateful that that's that that's going on, and that all of you guys who teach are here, and all of those of you who come and sit here are here. And you know, as much as one senses future, you guys are carrying the responsibility of the practice more so than you've ever carried it before. And I'm grateful.
It's with the, you're here with the two months, we'll be having lunch on a regular basis.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We have lunch sign up. And
yes. Yeah. People who are going to be here every week, you know, if people who can bring juice and bring fruit, and I guess Katyani brings brings the bagels and lox, but we need fruit and juice and coffee cake.
And we take donations.
And we take donations. Yes. For thank you very much. I appreciate it. There'll be a sheet downstairs. You can sign up. Thank you, guys. Thank you very much. See you next time.